Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that we are in the beginning of fall, of course, last Saturday was the autumnal equinox on September 22nd. I thought we'd read a little essay here as we're saying goodbye to September and saying hello to October in a day or two. Written by Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, very talented writer. And he entitles his essay, September, a Contender for Top Month. Eric writes, if you ranked the months of the year in order of how glad you are to see them arrive, where would you place September? It's easily the most complex month, a month predictably loaded with endings and beginnings of all sorts. September is urgent, thrilling, and sorrowful. A serious month, an exciting month, a hard but often rewarding and always temperate month that never seems to leave you the same as you were before Labor Day. But is that enough to make it number one? In this season of polling, pigskin and political, I'm asking you, the most discerning column readers in the six-county area, to make the collective decision. But first, to get the conversation going and not to influence your votes in any way, here's how I rank them. Number 12, January. The average daily temperature in Chicago bottoms out from January 13th through the 18th, an interminably long month in which this end of winter isn't in sight and it's too early to begin spending vacation weeks. Number 11, February. Perilous Valentine's Day and pesky President's Day combined with predictably cold and shabby weather make February nearly as dreadful as January, though mercifully shorter. 10, August. I loved August as a child for the same reasons I dreaded as an adult. It lacks structure. Camps are over. School hasn't started. Half the people you need to reach are away at the beach, and vacations tend to have an exhausting, purposeful quality this time of year. 9. December. Tis the season to be overscheduled and underprepared. But then, Christmas and the following week, which signal the gradual returning of daylight hours, are a lovely reward for all that endurance. 8. March. Every couple of years, March blesses us with a long run of delightful days that make real the observance of the spring equinox. But it's a tease. Old sayings notwithstanding, March tends to go out like a lion, too. 7. November. This dank, ever-darkening month has, as its great compensating virtue, two of the most wonderful days of the year. Thanksgiving, hands down the best of the holidays, and Election Day, when the basic idea of our democratic republic comes to life, even if only a pitiful percentage of registered voters bothers to participate. 6. April. Daylight savings time returns, and the shorts and sandals come out of storage. Very little yard work, and no snow shoveling required in April, which is blighted primarily by tax deadline day and excessive rain. 5. July. The last 2 weeks of July are, on average, the hottest weeks of the year in the Midwest. TV stinks and baseball season's in the doldrums, but summer has hit its stride by July, so this tends to be the most genuinely relaxing month of the year. October. The tangy sweater weather days of October give us long walks in gorgeously transforming forests, the World Series, football games that matter, and the cozy tranquility of hot cider. Were it not now for the now overdone observance of Halloween and the pall cast by the resumption of standard time, October might be a contender for number one. Number three, May. Nature's glorious renewal seems to put everyone in a good mood. Number two, September. New clothes, clean slates, political news that matters again, and the comfort of discovered rhythms in the restored order of life. Never is one more aware of opportunity and mortality, of the passing and promise of time, than in the gently constricting days of September. It would be the best month of the year were it not for, and number one is, June. The temperatures, the demands, the expectations, they are all deliciously moderate in a month defined by advancement, expansion, and graduation. Each June, we can't help but feel again the exuberance of the last day of classes and the joy of impending frivolities. Or am I wrong? Do I fail to appreciate the particular charms of the actual best month of the year? Is September merely a thief of light and leisure, as a friend recently wrote? Is it, in fact, a grim return to discipline, routine, and responsibility? Short afternoons and early mornings. I guess it's just up for us to decide. There you have it. September is urgent, thrilling, and sorrowful. A serious month, an exciting month. Well, we're saying goodbye to it nonetheless. And we'll start with October. And Halloween, of course, which has been on the shelves since August. And see what happens. But you know what's going to be happening on Saturday is the Harvest Moon, which is kind of interesting. Of course, last Saturday we had the autumnal equinox, which occurs when the sun sets due west and rises due east. It was on September 22nd, the first full day of autumn. Well, Saturday, the 29th, this Saturday, is the Harvest Moon, and it's going to be one of the brightest in over 10 years. Now, that's when there's almost an equal amount of daylight and sunlight. In fact, Saturday, the sun rises at 6:46 and sets at 6:36. The moon rises at 6:07 and settles at 6:17. Almost an equal amount of time. Interesting about the harvest moon is the moon at or about the period of fullness that is nearest to the autumnal equinox. The harvest moon is often mistaken for the modern-day hunter's moon. All full moons rise around the time of sunset. In general, the moon rises about 50 minutes later each day. As it moves in orbit around the Earth, the harvest moon and the hunter's moon are special because, around the time of these half-moons, the time difference between moonrise on successive evenings is shorter than usual. This means that the moon rises approximately 30 minutes or less later from one night to the next. Thus, there is no long period of darkness between sunset and moonrise around the time following these full moons. In times past, this feature of these autumn moons was said to help farmers working to bring in their crops, or in the case of the hunter's moon, hunters tracking their prey. They could continue being productive by moonlight even after the sun had set, hence the name Harvest Moon. And when the moon is out, and a full moon on the harvest moon, it's very bright outside. Often the harvest moon seems to be bigger or brighter or more colorful than other full moons. The warm color of the moon shortly after it rises is caused by light from the moon passing through a greater amount of atmospheric particles than when the moon is overhead. The atmosphere scatters the bluish component of moonlight, which is really reflected white light from the sun, but allows the reddish component of the light to travel a straighter path to one's eyes. Hence, all celestial bodies look reddish when they are low in the sky. That's what you see in the sunset. It looks almost red or orange. The apparent larger size is because the brain perceives a low-hanging moon to be larger than one that's high in the sky. This is known as a moon illusion, and it can be seen with any full moon. You'll see that as it rises in the sky, it looks huge. When it gets up in the sky, it doesn't look as big. It can also be seen with constellations. In other words, a constellation viewed low in the sky will appear bigger than when it is high in the sky. The harvest moon is also known as the wine moon, the singing moon, and the elk call moon. And it's part of American myth and folklore. In modern usage, when a second full moon occurs during any calendar month, which was last month, it's called a blue moon. In some cultures, individuals whose birthdays fall on or near a harvest moon must provide a feast for the rest of the community. Shine On, Harvest Moon is the name of a popular early 1900s song credited to the married vaudeville team Nora Bays and Jack Norworth. And Harvest Moon, of course, was a song written and sung by the composer and artist Neil Young. So interesting about the Harvest Moon. Look out for that on Saturday. And like I said, it will be rising about 6:07 before the sun sets at 6:36. The moon will be rising at 6:07. The sun won't be setting until 6:36, so you'll see both. And it'll be up there gradually, bigger and bigger, until it settles in the sky and comes back down at 6:17 a.m. So a little interesting information. You have some more information about the autumnal equinox, too, which we can share. But we can't inundate you with all this information at once. It's hard to digest. Of course, we want to mention one thing. I got a press release from our good friend Megan Freebeck, of course, who is the publicity director of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. Does a great job. And she's also the community relations manager at the Lincoln Park Community Shelter, a comprehensive social service agency servicing adult men and women who are experiencing homelessness. And it's about the Kick It Home Chicago. At a recent Chicago Alternative Policing Strategy meeting in Lincoln Park, we're familiar with the acronym CAPS, one of the greatest concerns of the police and the neighborhood is the influx in the homeless population. Shelters have been working tirelessly to provide safe and stable housing for people living on the streets in the meantime. The mission of Kick It Home Chicago is to bring together homeless shelters across Chicago in an effort to build relationships with one another, form a sense of teamwork and accomplishment between the guests and the staff, raise awareness within the community and break stereotypes about the homeless population, and offer an entertaining outlet for exercise. And Kick It Home Chicago will be held on October 6th, Saturday, and October 7th, Sunday, in Lincoln Park at a softball field just south of the zoo. On Saturday, the four teams will play each other from 4 to 7. The final two teams will then go on to the playoffs on Sunday. Sunday is when we'll host the playoffs at 4 o'clock, followed by a party in the park with food, games, and prizes. Very nice. Just a part of communities getting together. For information, give Megan a call at the Lincoln Park shelter at 773-549-6111. And again, the number of the Lincoln Park Community Shelter is 773-549-6111. Help on any way you can, and I'm sure they very much appreciate it. Well, of course, we had the Emmys just last Sunday, and some of the winners for Best Drama. What's interesting is less of the major stations, ABC and CBS and NBC, are winning awards, and more of the cable stations are winning them, much more. The Best Drama series was Homeland. Best Actor, Damian Lewis for Homeland, and the Best Actress, Claire Danes from Homeland. Quite a coup there. Best Supporting Actor, Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. Best Supporting Actress in a very popular show now, Downton Abbey, with Maggie Smith. Best Directing was Tim Van Patten. This is for drama. And writing for Homeland also. And of course, in the comedy group, Modern Family, which is a hilarious show. Looking forward to that starting again. One of the funniest shows on television. The whole cast is just outstanding. Best actor for a comedy is John Cryer from Two and a Half Men. And best actress, Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Veep. Best supporting actor, Eric Stonestreet, again from Modern Family, and Julie Bowen from Modern Family. And directing, Steve Levitin from Modern Family. Best writing is Louis C.K. from his show, Louis. Best miniseries or movie, Game Change. Best actor, Kevin Costner, which is very popular in Hatfields and McCoys. Best actress, Julianne Moore for Game Change. Best supporting actor, again, Hatfield and McCoys, Tom Berenger. Best supporting actress, Jessica Lange in American Horror Story. It's a very strange TV show, but critically acclaimed. Best director, Jay Roach in Game Change. variety series, Daily Show with Jon Stewart, special directing the Tony Awards, which is in a class of itself. In the reality series, The Amazing Race, and host from Dancing with the Stars, Tom Bergeron. So there you have it, the Emmys that were given out last week. Kind of interesting. Don't want to also forget our good friends over at Swirls, Pam Rose. Kick off a happy bear season at Swirls with an Izzy Bear Cupcake. From September 5th through October 6th, we'll be selling our Izzy Bear Banana Chocolate Chip Gummy Bear Cupcake with all the proceeds benefiting the Israel Adonijé Foundation, committed to connecting children and families in underserved communities. Israel will also be coming into Swirls to mix up a batch of his custom cupcakes. Thrilled to welcome him to the shop. Stay tuned for pictures from his visit, and be sure to stop in to try a delicious Izzy Bear cupcake while they're here. So go Bears, and if you want to visit Swirls, which is a terrific place, and Pam Rose is a terrific lady, 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital. Information 773-404-2253, or log on to their website, Swirls, S-W-I-R-L-Z, cupcakes.com, because, as Pam Rose says, and you will too after you have one or two, Swirls cupcakes make people happy. That's true. Interesting theater show today. We're going to be talking a little Sondheim with Billy Pachalski, who's putting on a great show at the Viaduct Theater. Another one of Sondheim's classic Tony Award-winning musicals, Assassins. And then we'll be talking about music and with two very talented people, husband and wife Michael Ingersoll. Of course, you know Michael from Under the Street Lamp and the great job he did with Jersey Boys. And also Angela Ingersoll, his very talented wife, who are going to be up at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts at Northlight Theater doing the show My Baby Just Cares for Me. Very, very talented couple. And, of course, we've had Michael on numerous times before. Very, very outgoing and kind person. Helping others, helping groups, always doing some benefits to help out. A person who really gives back to the community and the people who have helped him along the way. So it's going to be fun to chat with Michael again. Musical, we're going to play a little Frank Sinatra singing songs about love from his CD, The Heart of the Matter. And one of Cole Porter's favorites, which is I've Got You Under My Skin. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything come what might for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time that I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin.
sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near. In spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats how it yells in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Why not use your mentality? Step up, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. Yes, I've got you under my skin.
Frank Sinatra, one of the classics from Cole Porter, I've Got You Under My Skin. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Billy Pachalski presents Assassins, music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, book by John Weidman at the Viaduct Theater in Chicago, 3111 Northwestern, October 10th through November 10th. For more information, visit assassins-chicago.com. What better time to produce a musical about frustration with presidents than when we're trying to elect a new one? The 2012 election seems to be acting as a catalyst for the animosity and unrest of the American psyche. By fueling negative commentary around our political system and the toll it is taking on the dreams and expectations of the common man, says Billy Pachalski. The show is a perfect way to examine extremism in the history of our country and the underlying angers, hopes, and beliefs of its citizens in a fun and compelling way. Weaving together dreamlike narratives of the assassinations and attempted assassinations of the U.S. presidents, Sondheim's Tony Award-winning musical comedy brings to light the pain of alienation, regret, and isolation that underlies each character's failure to achieve the American dream. The New York Times hails Assassins as an extraordinarily original piece of theater, and the L.A. Times says Sondheim's killer musical comedy hits the mark. Side-splitting and sobering in equal measure, this is the most provocative musical in years. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning producer and director who has worked with Alicia Keys, the Black Eyed Peas, Lady Antebellum, and John Bon Jovi, corporate and large-scale event producer for Fortune 500 companies, administrator here in Chicago for the League of Chicago Theaters, the Goodman, and Second City, who splits his time between Chicago and my second favorite city, San Francisco, and the executive producer and artistic director for the Tony Award-winning Stephen Sondheim hit musical Assassins, the Viaduct Theater, 3111 Northwestern, October 10th through November 10th, Mr. Billy Pachalski. Billy, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you, and I think we're all excited. I know Ann Fink certainly is, and the people at Carol Fox, about Assassins coming up very soon at the Viaduct Theater. Congratulations on your well-worked-on endeavor here.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been working on this show for almost 18 months, which is, for a Chicago storefront show, I think a pretty long life cycle, and we're in the theater. We moved in this week. We're building sets and hanging lights, and we're all very excited to get this thing on its feet and show off to Chicago what we've been working on.
Well, not dissimilar, very frankly, when you look back at the history of Assassins. When Sondheim first wrote it, he wrote it back in 1990. It was on Off-Broadway, and then it was, you know, how many years, 15, 14 years later when it came to Broadway and won 5 Tony Awards.
Yeah, and went through some significant changes in the script, in the book, in that time. So, you know, in Sondheim's canon, it's really one of the shows that has continued to sort of evolve in a way. And I think, you know, each company that sort of does it puts its unique spin on it, because I think the show has different relevancy whenever it's produced, right? Like, whatever cycle we happen to be in our own presidential experience, whenever the show's produced, it sort of has a different context to it, I think.
Well, certainly timing is everything, and we certainly have something coming up in November that's reflective of that.
Yeah, there's this little thing that first week in November that we're doing that kind of makes the show feel, at least for me, very, very relevant this year, yeah.
Well, for our listeners, maybe give a little overview of course, the play Assassins, and, you know, we have fictional characters, the proprietor and the balladeer. We have historical characters like Booth and Oswald and Hinckley and Sarah J. Moore, but I'll let you do that because you'll do it best.
Yeah, it's a, you know, part of what makes the show so interesting is that it takes these sort of real-life stories of the presidential assassinations and most of the attempted assassinations And sort of takes those real-life characters and those real-life circumstances and sort of weaves them together in this sort of limbo or dreamlike narrative where the assassins actually interact with each other, they have conversations. Some of them even are active participants in convincing some of the other assassins to, you know, take that step to pick up their gun and do what it is that they do. Which, you know, that in and of itself is a pretty compelling and evocative way to tell these stories. So, you know, very literally, it sort of takes all these different narratives and puts them together. And then, you know, it, you know, like any good story, he needed a narrator. And so there's this character called the Balladeer, which is kind of like a Woody Guthrie kind of folk singer type who sort of steps into each story and acts as sort of the audience's touch point and takes us on, you know, each narrative journey and sort of tells the story as one whole piece. And there's some really interesting some interesting tricks that Sondheim puts in at the end of the show with the narrator, which is something that only he can do. It's very much in his style. But, you know, part of the thing that I love so much about this piece is the amount of history that's in it, and that's why we've taken really 18 months to put the show together, is we spent really the first 6 to 8 months, well, really almost 10, deep diving and really doing a lot of historical research into these you know, historical characters and learning a lot about who they were and what their motivations were, and both that and the social context of the time in which they did these despicable acts, which my show in no way justifies or apologizes for. But, we really took a lot of time to research because I wanted as much as possible for the show to be a very historical and faithful telling of what really happened while also layering on top of it a little bit of this imagining, you know, what would have happened if John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald had a conversation.
Is there an emotional common denominator amongst these assassins, these misfits who feel their problems will be solved by killing the presidents that you've seen as you are putting this together?
Absolutely. And I think it's an emotional common denominator that a lot of our citizens are feeling right now, which is why I think it's so relevant, at least to me as a director, and it's anger.
Mm-hmm.
All of these characters, for a variety of reasons, are incredibly angry, and they're angry that they cannot seem to live up to the ideals and the standards of the quote-unquote American dream. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't achieve the happiness that they look around and see everyone else achieving around them, you know, whether for some of them it's, you know, professional or career-driven, like John Wilkes Booth. You know, there's a new book that was just published a couple years ago by a Chicago author, Nora Tatone, called My Thoughts Be Bloody, and we actually had the opportunity to sit down with her. We took her out to dinner, and she got to meet the actor playing John Wilkes Booth, which was really fun, and we had a real long discussion about some of the interesting things she uncovered in her research about him. And, you know, at the bottom of it, he was just really a frustrated actor who actually wasn't very good and felt overshadowed by his brother and some of the family problems that they had in the Booth family. And, you know, this was really the way he thought he could make his mark, the way the rest of his family was all making mark. So I digress a little bit, but
that's very interesting. It was a serendipity type of moment there. You never know how you're going to run into things. Yeah,
right. And so that anger just really underlies it, whether it's, you know, John Wilkes Booth with Lincoln, or John Hinckley Jr., who attempted to shoot Ronald Reagan, was really just obsessed and in love with Jodie Foster, and just furious that he couldn't seem to achieve this ideal of, you know, the love that he thought he deserved. You know. And to me, that really parallels a lot of what we're seeing with these sort of extremist political movements like the Tea Party, the right-wing side, and, of course, Occupy and the left wing. It's like everybody's really angry, but nobody really knows who they're angry at.
Right,
and
right.
I think that sort of undefined anger has a tendency to turn into some really ugly stuff. And so I think that's what the show really that's really the common theme that I've found in all the assassins.
I'm going to read a little cultural essay here written about assassins, and it said, by developing the characters of historic assassins out of the slim biographical information found in the Daily News, Assassins prompts us to consider their motivation. Sondheim confronts pain in order to cauterize the decay and heal the sicknesses which lurk at the core of our society.
Yeah.
Departing from the humanism of his previous musical, Into the Woods, which is kind of interesting. It's about fairy tales. Sondheim suggests that political murders are a product, as you said yourself, Billy, of the American political culture. It's a product of American culture. And the Balladeer is kind of the personification of the American dream. And here he is telling the story.
Yep. And, you know, what's interesting is that, no other, and I'm going to say this, and I think it's true, because I remember reading this and some of the research we found, but if anybody knows anything differently, please prove me wrong, but I believe we're the only nation in the world, modern nation in the world, that has had the number of assassination attempts on our leaders.
Hmm.
So, that has to say something about our political system.
Hmm. Interesting. And you look at something like this, and it's amazing, and I've always been amazed about Sondheim. What he can take and make it into a hit musical. We start with the Romans, and a funny thing happened the way the Forum. Then, of course, he does Company. Then he does Follies, Little Night Music, Pacific Overtures, of course, who we wrote this with, John Weidman, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and Sunday in the Park with Georges back in the Chicagoland area now, of course, at Shakespeare Theater, about Seurat's great painting. But what he's able to do here and make it a hit, and when you think, how can this be entertaining? But it certainly is.
Well, he definitely has a track record of making shows about unlikable people. Like, I think a common thread in a lot of his work is, you know, even something like Company, right? Like the protagonist in Company,
right?
Kind of not really a likable guy. Like, he's kind of a jerk, you know, until, you know, the end when he sort of has a revelation about himself. But it's been really fun, actually, because I've sort of become best friends with these nine people, these nine characters.
Mm.
And, you know, one thing that I've learned is that there's a little bit of myself in each one of these. And, you know, our production is slightly different. The way that we've approached this and the way that we're staging it, and I think the experience, the journey that we're trying to take our audience on is going to be very different than even the two Broadway casts, if people are familiar with those soundtracks and things. We've really put our own spin on it and are doing something really unique. And we're bringing it back down to that very human level. So you were quoting that essay saying that this, unlike Into the Woods, is not very humanist. We've actually sort of brought it to that different tone,
mm-hmm.
where it is, we're approaching this from a very humanist perspective. I want the audience to really identify with the assassins in a weird way. Like, I want them, the way that I have found, you know, little bits of myself in each one of these characters, I want the audience to have that experience too. Not to sympathize with what they did, but to sympathize with who they were.
And I think that's the essence of theater. I think what you're doing, Billy, I think, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that the purpose is to stimulate and engage the audience's creativity, or to stimulate and engage the audience's intellect, or to stimulate and engage the audience's imagination. And that's what you're doing. This is something out of the ordinary. That's what Sondheim is doing.
Yeah.
You have a great deal of intellectual and imaginative stimulation as you come into the theater and leave the theater, because you're going to leave differently than when you came in.
Yeah, I think that's the hope of all performing arts, I think. I would hope, at least for me it is. And, you know, Sondheim has given us just truly amazing material to work with here. The songs are just gorgeous, and Robert Aulis, our music director, who's been in Chicago for a long time doing a lot of work, so people may be familiar with him, very accomplished and just a wonderful asset to the team. And the cast of singers that we have is just really spectacular. I think people are going to be really impressed by the talent. And each one of the actors is, with very few small exceptions, are age-appropriate to their characters. Lots of people I've noticed, at least in putting this on, have sort of skewed impressions of who people were. Like, everybody sort of thinks of John Wilkes Booth as this, like, you know, late 30s, sort of very large stage presence kind of guy. And actually, he was 27 years old when he shot Lincoln. And, he was 5'8 and athletic, but slight in build. And he was kind of a little guy, really. And only 27, which that is remarkable to me. And so, you know, our actor is age-appropriate and has sort of exactly the physical build that John Wilkes Booth would have had. It's kind of chilling, actually. It's a little bit eerie to see these replicas of these characters on stage.
Well, I think it's going to be a great month at the Viaduct Theater. Billy has assembled a talented cast and design team comprised of some of the most exciting new theater talent in Chicago, says producer Jennifer Marling. In addition to presenting an impactful and visually exciting production, we believe that our performances of Assassins promise to raise the level of both social and political discourse in this highly charged election season. Billy's goal is to portray the real human stories of the people on which the musical is based while assuming a contemporary aesthetic sure to connect with savvy audiences. Billy Pachowski presents Assassins, music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, book by John Weidman at the Viaduct Theater in Chicago, 3111 Northwestern, October 10th through the November 10th. And on the line with us right is Billy Pachowski. Billy, a delight to chat with you. Certainly always fun to talk about Sondheim, and I'm looking forward to seeing this. And I'm sure that Anne Fink and Carol Fox will head the word out to everybody. They'll all be there.
We're definitely working on it.
Well, so. That's great. And if we wanted to get some information, again, I'm going to mention this, assassins-chicago.com, and the phone number of the theater is 312-212-3470. Keep us on the radar. If there's anything else we can do to get the word out, we will be talking about it over the show the next couple weeks, of course. And I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Great. I look forward to seeing you there.
And continued success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Billy.
Bye-bye.
Billy Pachowski, who is bringing Assassins, the great Stephen Sondheim musical, to the Viaduct Theater, 3111 Northwestern, October 10th through November 10th. For information, assassins-chicago.com. Or call the box office at 312-212-3470. I think we're going to play one of Nelson Riddle's songs for Frank Sinatra, Song of Lilting Loneliness and Desperate Heartbreak, in the wee small hours of the morning. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl, and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most of lesson. You'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her.
Frank Sinatra in the wee small hours of the morning. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Northlight Theater, under the direction of Artistic Director B.J. Jones and Executive Director Tim Evans, presents My Baby Just Cares For Me, a special fall benefit concert featuring the married musical theater duo Michael and Angela Ingersoll. The event will take place Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd at 8 o'clock at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. Sparks fly as irresistible husband and wife duo Michael and Angela Ingersoll share the spotlight for a scintillating night of classic pop favorites. He's the affable crooner from Jersey Boys and the PBS vocal group Sensation Under the Street Lamp. She's the vivacious starlet from the Second City Hollywood with two Jeff Awardnats. Together, the playful pair woos audiences with all the candor and chemistry of a modern-day George and Gracie. Their hilarious, heartwarming soiree features unforgettable hits from the Drifters, the Beatles, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, Sam Cooke, Leslie Gore, Bobby Darin, the Jackson 5, Judy Garland, and many more. It's Love in Concert, Live in Concert. And on the line with us right now are the stars, Second City Hollywood, Io West, and the Upright Citizens Brigade. Angela has been seen here in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater, Drury Lane, Chicago Shakespeare and Light Opera Works, and the Metropolis Performing Arts Center. Angela is a Jeff-nominated actress, comfortable in comedy, dramatic, and musical theater. And her husband, Michael Ingersoll, award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having appeared on The Oprah Show, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and the Emmy Awards. Also a Jeff-nominated actor who has appeared in Chicago with Pegasus Players and at the Metropolis. Proud graduate of Miami University in Ohio, one of Chicago's favorite vocalists, having starred in Jersey Boys and his own successful entertainment group show, Under the Street Lamp. Now presenting a special fall benefit concert for Northlight Theater, My Baby Just Cares for Me, at Northlight Theater at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd at 8 p.m. Welcome, Angela and Michael Ingersoll. Good to have you on the show.
Hello, Kevin. It's wonderful to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you. Angela, it's our first visit. Of course, Michael and I have talked many times on the show. It's great to have you on, and congratulations. Everybody's looking forward up in Skokie to have you come by.
Many thanks. We're extremely excited to work with them. They've been so warm and so accommodating and made us feel right at home.
Well, I know you're going to be carrying him now for that couple days there.
Well, you betcha. Who wouldn't be?
It's going to be fun. Tell us about this. Now, you're going to be singing songs and kind of doing some little comedy, what you do so well, Angela. What's it going to be about?
Yeah, we are presenting this concert evening. It's not so much a play as it is the kind of concert maybe you would see in somebody's living room in the 50s or 60s.
Okay.
Kind of like evening soirees where, yeah, there's a lot of joke telling and a lot of pop classics throughout both the jazz and the more rock and roll eras of classic pop.
Well, of course, Michael knows a little bit about the rock and roll singing from the Jersey Boys, I'm sure.
I do a little bit, yeah. I sang Sherry 1,300 times. That's enough to know the words at this point, brother.
Well, you know, it's funny, and the Jersey Boys keeps coming back and so forth, and you've had such great success, Michael, with Under the Street Lamp. In fact, I told our mutual friend Jimmy Jarvis that I was going to have you on a show, who's out at the Paramount now,
right,
and
yeah.
He said to say hello to both of you guys. And, you know, it's just fun to hear that music because we grew up with that music and you just you don't get enough of it because you remember where you were doing or who you were with or what time it was when you were listening to it the first time.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that that I created Under the Street Lamp after Jersey Boys, and then subsequently Angie and I created My Baby Just Cares for Me. You know, we've been in so many situations where we sing that music and the audience out there for that music, the baby boomers and even the baby boomers folks, are such an enthusiastic and appreciative audience that we had just found out that this was the audience we wanted to serve. And so we've just stayed in that genre, keeping that music alive. And it just turns out that a lot of folks like to see young people singing the music of their youth. So we've just jumped in with both feet.
It's also rather growing that there are some of the baby boomers kids that are, I mean, that's us. We're baby boomer kids. And there are a lot
true.
Of those kind of folks that really appreciate this music, too, because it just stands the test of time.
And, you know, it's true because it spans generations. You have grandparents, you have the parents, and you have the kids because the kids are listening to what that was, you know?
Yeah, it's true family entertainment. It's really, like, great American culture contribution to the world, you know, this whole genre of music.
Well, and just to show you how strong the support is for this kind of music, you know, Under the Street Lamp, we've been working for a couple of years on our show, but we just hit PBS this March, so we're only about 7 months old as a group, and yet we've been in one out of two homes in America. That's about 170 million.
Whoa.
So that just shows you how many fans of rock and roll are still out there. And, you know, these are my people. I'm sticking to them. I'm sticking with them.
How was that? Was that a lot of fun doing that PBS special, Mike?
Oh, it was incredible, man.
Yeah.
You know, every artist dreams of creating their own work. The guys and I who, you know, all used to be in Jersey Boys together created this together. And, you know, we direct our own course. And, of course, there are tons and tons of challenges that come with it. But, you know, creating your own work is a privilege. And it's even more of a privilege to create your own work with your partner and the person that you love more than anything else in the world. And that's why this opportunity to do the 50s, 60s pop hits retrospective at Northlight Theater is just a ball for me and Ange.
And it was all Tim Emmons' idea, the executive director over there. He had a relationship with Michael because Michael's worked with him on fundraisers before, mm-hmm. and he wanted a brand new approach to what were they going to do for their fundraiser benefit, and came up with the idea of creating this new show, something totally fresh for their audience, and we just couldn't be more privileged to be asked and making this thing that we're so excited at.
Well,
it's brand new.
And you bring up a good point about the fundraising that Michael does and you mm-hmm. both are involved in. Of course, there's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And mm-hmm. nobody's more reflective of that than you guys. Of course, with the work you do for the American Cancer Society, Metropolis, Roosevelt University, Museum of Science and Industry, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, United Way, and on and on and on. And it keeps on building the things you do. I think that, if people haven't thanked you, I'm sure they have. I, and certainly as for all the listeners, appreciate everything you do for everybody.
Well, thank you very much. We believe that if you're privileged enough to have a platform in the business, that, you have an audience. For instance, we're privileged enough to speak with you and your radio audience right now. You have a choice. You can either spread positivity and help build people up, or you can use your words to create divisiveness. And we're certainly in the former there. So anytime we've had an opportunity to show our gratitude by action, actually doing something and helping folks out and, teaming up with folks like Northlight, and we also get to sing, everybody wins, man. It's a wonderful way to go about it.
Well, now, Ange, you've worn a lot of different hats. You enjoy the comedic side of theater and the dramatic side. I remember at the auditorium when you were at the Apple Tree Theater doing the Mistress Cycle. That was just terrific. Then you were Jeff nominated for that, right?
Absolutely. It was a very sexy show, a very sexy opportunity. She was based on a real-life character, and so of Anais Nin, and who was a neurotic writer. And so getting to delve into a character like that, I was so privileged to be in a beautiful cast. And it's been funny to delve into a new piece, and I can't quite get away from that sense of really loving the biographical characters like that, so I've actually created a piece in our new concert where I'm doing a couple of, dare I say, impressions.
Spot on impressions, man.
I have a coterie of all of these favorite divas I listened to as a kid, and Judy Garland and company, and
Marilyn Monroe.
That's what I was actually doing right before we got on the line with you, was I was doing a little bit of pee off.
Oh, really? Well, we can do this interview in PF, you'd like.
I only know so much French.
Okay.
My French is limited.
Just lay on the couch and talk.
But, there's something about that biographical performance aspect that was particularly alluring to me in the Mr. Cycle show that you mentioned that I'm also definitely bringing into this one. I like to pay tribute.
And, 39 Steps, that's a funny musical. That's just terrific. That's a funny play.
It was a masterful show. It was really, really amazing. The crew and cast and directors assembled for that show were really special. And that's what brought me back to Chicago, actually. Michael and I have been in Los Angeles for 2 years. And 39 Steps at Drury Lane gave me the opportunity to come back here, and that's how we ran into Tim to start developing this concert. So the ball keeps rolling, and we can't quite get away.
Lucky for us, that's the truth. And yourself, what's going on? Are you going to keep doing Under the Street Lamp around the country?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a 2-week tour coming up here in October. We're actually going to be at the Elgin Community College, and we're going to end the year at the Paramount in Aurora for New Year's Eve.
Oh, great.
But, we've got all the rest of the year. I'm barely going to see this man pass this concert.
And she's lucky for it. but, yeah, we're on tour from November to October 1st, and we're already working on next year's tour, and we're working on a sit-down run in Vegas. And, like I said, the audience is out there for this music. We try to do our very best to do it justice, and we're lucky the public continues to respond.
Michael, when you were starting your career, when you were looking up to people, who did you emulate? Who did you see and enjoy as entertainers? People like Frank Sinatra, Michael Bublé, or who do you look at and say, those are special people with a special style. I'm going to kind of see if I can tweak a little bit of that and make my own.
Well, I don't know anybody who sings standards who does not. It was influenced on some level by Sinatra. And, Michael Bublé is certainly a role model for me. He's a young person that's made a living singing standards and created his own music out of it. But, what was kind of a surprise to me is I began to really start to get into Southern and folk singers that, you know, people like Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. who started in Southern folk and rockabilly, and Johnny Cash, and Roy Orbison, and these folks that tell working class men's and women's and family stories. So basically, you know, when I do a Sinatra tune, you can definitely hear a little Elvis or Roy in the background.
Mm-hmm. I can smell a lot of Garth Brooks on you as well.
That's true. I mean, I got a guilty pleasure in Garth Brooks, man. I love that dude.
He's a great artist. He is.
And how about yourself, Angela? How did you want to kind of go into dramatic theater when you started out, or you always had a kind of a affinity for the comedic side of things?
I started performing singing on stage when I was about five. Mm-hmm. I had a fairy godmother of a public school music teacher.
Oh, really?
Who said, you have a voice. And she really steered the path for my entire life, and I'm always grateful to her. And so I started off actually singing I Am of the Annie Generation. So
okay.
That was a window in. Sure. But it was Judy Garland was the real hook for me as a child.
Really?
And as I grew, I was just addicted to Saturday Night Live and a lot of the 70s comedy and Steve Martin and Bill Murray and all of this. So I've constantly been pulled in the two directions where my great loves are, you know, Shakespeare and pretzels, you know. I can't help getting my, and of course singing is in there. So this is the first time I've really been able to put together my own synthesis of those loves and talents, because I can't really separate my love of comedy from my love of poetry, and they just go together. And so this is going to be an exciting opportunity for me to try out both, honestly. I mean, there's, you know, just a little tiny spice of a vaudevillian style to our show in that, you know, there are definitely some bits.
I think it's going to be fun for all of us, absolutely. We, you know, we have in Chicago right now, there's a musical Broadway in Chicago. It's I Love Lucy, the live on stage.
I have friends working on it, but haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it brings you back, and it's funny. And when you think about that, you like think of Gracie, George and Gracie. You think of Desi and Lucy and so forth. You know, they did it effortlessly. I'm sure they worked on it, but it comes across, and it still makes you laugh.
And that's what we stick to, yeah, that chemistry.
Sure.
A mile away.
Well, you know, here's the other thing. You can still be funny and create a show where the entire family can attend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we have, I would say, a mature sense of humor, but there's nothing about our show that's profane, whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old, mm-hmm. is a show that you can attend. And, you know, we just don't have too many forms of entertainment now where the entire family can watch. I mean, you know, there isn't, we don't have the Cosby Show anymore, Family
right.
Ties.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important to keep art alive in the community that people can attend
together.
A family,
yeah.
You know, and truly enjoy it. And that's one of the things that's important to us.
And nobody does that better than Michael and Angela Ingersoll. To premiere Michael and Angela Ingersoll's new production, My Baby Just Cares For Me, at our first annual fall benefit is a real treat for Northlight, explains Tim Evans, executive director. This amazing husband and wife act joins the ranks of George and Gracie, Lucy and Desi, Louie and Keeley with their new show that glimmers with wit, humor, and unforgettable music. It's the perfect way to usher in a new tradition of benefit performances at Northlight. Northlight Theater, under the direction of Artistic Director B.J. Jones and Executive Director Tim Evans, presents My Baby Just Cares For Me, a special fall benefit concert featuring the married musical theater duo Michael and Angela Ingersoll. The event will take place Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd at 8 at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. I'm on the line with them right now are Michael and Angela Ingersoll. A pleasure to have you on the show, Angela. It's great, and we got to do it more than once. And Michael, of course, it's always a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you, sir. I always appreciate you having us on there. It's always a great time with you.
Well, let's keep on each other's radar, and we'll look forward to seeing you on October 1st and 2nd.
Thank you, sir.
Look forward to seeing you.
And safe travels.
Bye.
Take care now.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Michael and Angela Ingersoll. My Baby Just Cares For Me, Northlight Theater, under the direction of Artistic Director B.J. Jones and Executive Director Tim Evans. Don't want to miss it, because very, very talented people. Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd, 8 o'clock. For information, give the Northlight Theater a call at 847-673-6300. Another little essay on the change of the seasons as we say goodbye to summer and hello to autumn, written by Vincent Kamen. Vincent writes, "The last breeze of summer slips through my open window like an old song whispering farewell. It crests in midair looking back at me. It rustles the trees, awakening sleeping squirrels in their newfound nests. Each leaf holds on for dear life. Each is an incipient thrall of faded colors, transformed from aerial art, racing like street urchins in search of a pile or clump to join. Each mound resembles shades of Monet's palette as they dart away without as much a wave or goodbye. Some spiral in the air trying to return, but it's just too late. My pines refuse to acknowledge them. They bristle in the sunlight, their hues the last visage of summer colors. Their boughs will hold the new snow when my windows are closed and winter becomes a reflective canvas of white skies. For now, the blurs of summer ebb. Corn stalks peer from lampposts in the city like martyrs of bounty, left standing in the shadows of spent leaves. Remnants of brethren gone, waiting as wood smoke conceals winter's first snowfall, and trees stand inside lighted by a myriad of Christmas colors. Very descriptive little essay by Vincent Kamen, The Change of the Seasons. Well, we're not ready for the snow yet, though. Hold the phone here. But we are ready for the full moon, as we remember last week's autumnal equinox, and certainly enjoy the harvest moon that's going to come up on Saturday. Had the opportunity to meet some people over at the Milwaukee Art Museum, Kristen Settle. And for information, give Kristen a call at 414-224-3246. They have a great exhibit coming up, the Rembrandt, Van Dyck, and Gainsborough, The Treasures of Kenwood House in London from October 12th through January 13th. And we're going to be able to go up to the museum, which is a beautifully architecturally pleasing museum, which is up at Milwaukee, and view the exhibit and certainly be able to come back and chat with somebody, maybe one of their curators, about it. So that should be a lot of fun. Rembrandt, Van Dyck, and Gainsborough. Should be good. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Angela and Michael Ingersoll, who will be at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd at 8. My baby just cares for me. A benefit for Northlight Theater, and certainly it'll be a very, very entertaining evening with two very, very talented people. And Billy Pachowski, Stephen Sondheim's Tony Award-winning musical Assassins at the Viaduct Theater, 3111 Northwestern, October 10th through November 10th. For information, 312-212-3470, or go onto their website, assassins-chicago.com. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
And if we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows,
any luck than I suppose. The music, the music.